Sairam, dear listeners, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai welcoming you to yet another episode of our weekly series, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. Thank you, Vishu. And we begin this program by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet for giving us this beautiful opportunity to listen to his wonderful discourses. Especially this series, we are studying the 1990 Samukos series, is so elaborate, and it goes, as we have said many times before, layer by layer, unraveling things, starting with the gross body, going to the subtle and subtler mind, senses, and the various other tools that the humankind has been bestowed with to reach its goal. As it happens every week, I'm joined by Brother Sai Prakash of Team Radio Sai, and as it happened last week, we have the company of Suresh Rao sir with us to take us through this segment. Sairam Sai Prakash and Sairam sir.
Thank you.
The last discourse which he completed, the sixth discourse in the series, was on the mind, hold the reins. The discourse which we are going to embark on today is again on the minds, what Swami calls it, the vagaries of the mind.
True. And you know the famous statement Swami always says, mind is like a mad monkey.
And sometimes I think it depends on how intensely Swami wants to put it forth. Sometimes Swami says mind is like a mad monkey. Sometimes he has said that mind is like a drunk mad monkey. And sometimes he has said it's a mad monkey which is drunk and it has been stung by a scorpion.
Oh, okay. That's amazing.
And you know, looking at it, this concept, I mean, this study of the mind is something which has fascinated mankind for a long time. The whole field of psychology is actually about the mind. You know, psyche is the, I think, Latin word for mind, and psychology is all about that. And if we look at psychology, it's taken some form only as late as the 17th century.
Okay.
And Sigmund Freud and all that, all these people came. But to look at it for the East, in the Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, I think, is one of the earliest scriptures which have dwelled into the depths of the mind. And people who have read both say that still modern psychology has a long way to catch up.
Correct.
Before it comes to... because as we were talking to GVP sir, he was telling the reason why they're not able to replicate in machines the human mind is because we have not understood the human mind.
Correct.
You cannot replicate something which you don't have complete knowledge about. And...
that's true. And the mind, as we have seen and how Swami has described, is the cause for bondage and liberation.
Right.
But there's something very interesting about the mind which, you know, wants a little bit of analysis. How the mind really inspires. Possibly you could think of it as a lower mind and a higher mind. A lower mind is one that you use for your daily actions or your daily life. But think of a symphony, think of an artist, think of something very creative, or think of something very scientific, an invention or a discovery. I'm sure they are tapping into higher levels of the mind, where the mind, as we say, is inspired by the buddhi.
Right.
As inspired by the intellect. And I mean, if you just take a piece of art, if you take something like Michelangelo's Pita, for example, means he has just seen that whole piece of marble, and he has already seen that statue carved there. And you know, the speciality of that piece, because I had read about it, mm-hmm. is the mother's face is so young. It's younger than actually the Christ's face.
Okay.
See, Mother Mary's face is depicted younger than Christ's face. That is because he believes that that is a symbolism of motherhood, which will never grow old. You know, the symbolism of motherhood that has taken the Christ's body on her lap. And I mean, these are things I would say are really inspired by intellect, and they come from the heart actually. Because this is not depiction of an event. This goes beyond that.
Yes, as you said, intuition plays an important part.
Very true, very true.
If you see, even in the life of the scientists who have come out with their inventions and discoveries, like you said, Kekulé's theory in your chemist, you know.
He has it in the dream.
Benzene ring, he was struggling to find out the actual
structure
of benzene.
Correct.
And one fine day, suddenly by inspiration, he saw the whole benzene ring in front of his eyes, you know.
Mm.
And he shouted, just like Archimedes shouted Eureka when he found the principle.
It's very true. A common debate in the scientific circle is, because most of the inventions and discoveries are serendipitous, mm-hmm. accidental.
Sure.
So, is there anything which is done consciously? Or is everything just received? It's just an accident. The whole of science, is it a combination of all accidents? And I think Louis Pasteur made that statement. He said, luck favors a trained mind.
Oh, okay.
So he said, unless your mind is trained, you will not be there to capitalize on that moment of accident or that chance.
That's very true, because how many people before Newton saw the apple falling?
Absolutely.
It is actually the higher mind, that is the intuition, which fulfills reason, you know, and yet rises above reason. That is how that discoveries come from a higher region, actually.
Right. In fact, I think Yogananda also writes about this concept. He says, how is that that all scientists in a period of time thought that the earth was flat? Then almost a collective conscience, you can see a development of collective consciousness where they all say that no, the earth is round. Then all of them, when they were said, at a point they said geocentric, the whole universe is around the earth. And everybody came to the conclusion, no, the earth is around the, revolving around the sun. And he says that for a long period everybody thought classical mechanics is the only thing which defines physical world.
Correct.
And everybody together, you know, at the same time, there's somebody in the west of the hemisphere and somebody in the east who both have the same thought.
Of quantum.
Yeah. Right. So he says it can only happen if there is one consciousness and that has decided to evolve.
Yeah, you know, it's all, I'm just tempted to think of it as God is having a, you know, a secret packet, and slowly is opening and revealing secrets of his creation to mankind. And it kind of comes in pulses, and there is a collective consciousness that's waking up and then seeing that. But as you said, the science, the inner science, that was very well developed way back by our ancients.
Right, very true. Because, you know, even when we do any experiment in the lab, we have found that atmospheric pressure or the gases in the atmosphere affect our reaction. So we have found ways of, you know, doing it in zero pressure, in vacuum, trying to remove air and oxygen and then do the thing. So if you look at science, it was always trying to remove the obstruction which was not bringing the native result which we were looking for.
Correct.
But the same thing, you look at these rishis who are inner scientists, you know, who looked inside. They found that if there was something which was distorting the idea which they're looking for, they felt it was the mind.
That's true.
So they went to deal with the mind. They said, let's still the mind, let's kill the mind, and then we can get the actual information which you're looking for. Till then, it's going to be biased or colored information.
Correct.
Yeah, the basic thing was, what is that, knowing which everything else becomes known. Right. That was the principle for these rishis to strive for. The transcendental state. The mind, of course, can give you limited knowledge, limited pieces of knowledge. So they said this is not going to be satisfactory in the long run. You know, you keep on studying a bit of physics, bit of chemistry, and you say you are an educated man. That doesn't really fulfill your inner.
Interesting, you said that's from which Upanishad, sir?
Which one?
The son goes to the father.
I think this is Chandogya.
Where the son goes after the completion of his education. And typically of a scientist, not putting down anybody.
Shvetaketu.
He goes with the pride of having known worldly knowledge.
Correct.
So that time his father asks him this question.
Gautama.
Have you learned that by learning which you can know everything?
And then he realizes that his knowledge is not that unconditional type which you have to get for, wait for. You know.
Right.
And he goes back, and then it seems he gets realization in this final efforts on his own. See. But there is another approach of another story in that same Upanishad that is dealing with the Satyakama. His approach is also similar, but he attains through nature, through the being in tune with nature. Because he is a son of Jabala, the woman who is a housemaid, one day he wants to go for guru who will give him the Vedantic knowledge, you know. And when he goes, he sees that the guru is asking him his antecedents.
Correct.
Who are you? Who is your father? What is your gotra? And he asks his mother, Mother says, see, I was a housemaid working everywhere. I don't know who your father is. So he goes, but he's so keen on getting this knowledge, he goes to his guru and says, yes, I don't know who my father is. And the guru is shocked. He says, only a Brahmin son can give this kind of truthful answer. So he accepts him. So he accepts him as his disciple. And he says, the way they taught in this Gurukuls, you know, he just gives him 400 cows and tells him to go into the forest and come back after they have become 1,000. That was the project. And he goes into the forest with those cows because they believe in the master's word, you know. The master says, you go means you go, you don't bother. That is the kind of faith they had. He goes into the forest and lives in tune with nature because there is nothing else there, you know, except the cows and him, and looking after them, feeding them and things like that. And finally one day, maybe after several months, one of the bulls starts talking to him. He says, we are now 1,000, let us go back. See how tuned in nature and animals and all this, how they believe that oneness comes through, you know. So he says, okay, we'll start off. He goes back with those 1,000 cows. On the way, he sees, meets a swan in the lake. And the swan talks to him highest Vedantic truths. He gets the truth from the swan. And he goes further than somebody else, you know, some other animals, birds and deers, they start talking to him about God and truth. And by the time he reaches the guru's ashram, his face is shining with the knowledge of Brahman. And the guru says, now you have learnt what has to be learnt. Vivekananda says that is the knowledge that he got from his own heart, which was purified. See, he thinks that bull is speaking to him, the swan is speaking to him. Actually, it is his own higher self that is speaking to him, you know, from his inner heart. And that is how the whole thing is realized by Shvetaketu, without any tutoring or learning from books. And so that was a beautiful thing about those times.
I think that's the beauty. You know, there is a conversation when somebody goes and asks Ravana Maharshi, does heaven and hell exist? You know, is there a rebirth? Does heaven and hell exist? So he is like waiting for that master's word because that's going to be the answer for his confusion for so many years. And Ramana gives an answer which is, I think, puts him into more confusion. He says, if you think it's there, it's there. If you think it's not there, it's not there. Literally meaning that you can take any concept and you can approach it in any way. As Sarva was saying, you approach as nature as your guru. Dattatreya says that 24 gurus I had. Or you can say that, you know, once an elder asked me this question. He said, what kind of a spiritual path are you going to take? And he said, are you going to be like Shankara, who traveled the whole land and said that divinity is only one? Or are you going to be like Aurobindo, who confined himself to a single room and said that that Lord is expansive and universal? So the paths may be many, but you know, I think Swami says goal. Shraddha and Vairagya. He said, if you're earnest and if you're ready to give up anything for that sake, you reach everything. Should we quickly go through what Swami said in the previous discourse, maybe very briefly?
Yes, I think that would be good.
Because I think Swami is going to continue from where he has left. As we said, Swami started by explaining why is it necessary to look at the mind. You know, why the mind is separate from the body. And the mind has to be looked at, and Swami said the mind, body, atma. The coherence and coordination between these three is actually what defines a man. And that is why you need to understand what is the role of the mind, what is the role of the body, and the atma, and what is it in juxtaposed to the atma. Then Swami went on to explain the four aspects of the mind based on their functions, and then explain how duality is born out of thoughts, and how to go back to unity, you need to concentrate on thoughts. And the thoughts which were the path for the duality will be the path for unity also. And Swami says that. And then Swami gives that example from the Kathopanishad of the chariot analogy of the mind, which explains. And then Swami gives a few ways how to, you know, control the mind. Swami says you have to practice detachment through selfishness, selflessness.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami says how seva is a very beautiful tool for that process. It is easy to practice detachment through seva. Then Swami says replace every bad thought with a good thought. Consciously being aware of the bad thought which comes and replacing it actively with a good thought. And then Swami said, talked about this mantra, literally, where you repeat to yourself, I am not an animal, I am a man. And how that will help you. And then when Swami says, when a thought arises, you know, let it pass through the filter of buddhi before you convert it into action.
Action. Correct.
So these are some of the tools which Swami gave. And I think, should that be enough for us to carry on to the
Yes, I think
discourse?
We should start the next discourse.
Okay, we'll go to the first clip of the seventh discourse, the discourse called Vagaries of the Mind.
Manasu karanambu mariyantu undina manasu karanambu mariyantu undina inlu అడవి ముక్తి నియలేవు మనసు లేనివాడు మందిరమునన్న మనసు లేనివాడు మందిరమునన్న కాననమునన్న కార్యమొకటే మనసు లేనివాడు మనసు లేనివాడు మందిరమునన్న కారణమునన్న కార్యమొకటే మనసు లేనివాడు మందిరమునన్న కాననమునన్న కార్యమొకటే
Wherever you are, be it at home or anywhere else, it is the mind which is the cause and which confers liberation. A person who does not have mind, whether he is in the temple or in the forest, it is the same. The result is the same.
Vidyarthulara.
Dear students,
Vishyam darpana drushyamana nagare ani dakshinamurti annadu. ఈ విషయమంతయు కూడాను మనస్సు అనే దర్పణమునందు ఒక పట్టణం వలె కనిపిస్తున్నది.
దక్షిణామూర్తి హెస్ డిక్లర్డ్ దట్ దిస్ ఎంటైర్ యూనివర్స్ ఈజ్ సీన్ యాజ్ అ సిటీ త్రూ ది ఐ ఆఫ్ ఎ నీడిల్.
మానవుడు సాధించవలసినటువంటిది ధర్మ అర్థ కామ మోక్షములు కాదు.
What man has to achieve and accomplish are not the four goals of life, dharma, artha, kama and moksha.
Antakkarana nirmoolamu, antakkarana parishuddhame, manavuniki pradhanamaina purushartham.
The most important goal for man is to eliminate his antakkarana and to purify it.
Manomoolam idam jagat. Jagat antayikudunu మనసు చేతనే ఆధారపడి ఉంటుండాలి.
ద ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ డిపెండెంట్ అపాన్ ద మైండ్.
విశ్వమునందు జరుగు సుఖదుఖములు కాని, పాప పుణ్యములు కాని, సత్యాసత్యములు కాని, అన్యాయ అక్రమములు కాని, అన్నీ కూడాను మనసునందే జరుగుచున్నవి.
వెదర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ హ్యాపీనెస్ ఆర్ సారో, సిన్ ఆర్ వర్చ్యూ, ట్రూత్ ఆర్ అన్ట్రూత్, all these things take place inside the mind.
Annintiki nee manase kaaranam.
For everything therefore mind is the cause.
Manageva manushyanam kaaranam bandhamochyo. Bandhamochyamulu kudamu manase kaaranam.
For bondage or liberation mind is responsible.
Aithe ee manasu శుద్ధమైన అర్థం వంటిది.
బట్ దెన్ మైండ్ ఈజ్ లైక్ ఎ ప్యూర్ మిరర్.
కానీ మనస్సుకు స్వతసిద్ధమైనటువంటి యొక్క శక్తి లేదు.
బట్ ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ ఎ సెల్ఫ్ ల్యూమినస్ కెపాసిటీ.
ఈ మనస్సు ఇంద్రియములను ఆశ్రయించి ఉంటున్నది.
ఇట్ ఈజ్ టేకింగ్ షెల్టర్ విత్ అండర్ సెన్సెస్.
ఇది నేత్రముల ద్వారా చూస్తున్నది.
ఇట్ సీస్ త్రూ ద ఐస్.
తాను స్వతసిద్ధంగా చూడలేదు.
బట్ ఇట్ కెనాట్ సీ బై ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్.
కర్ణముల ద్వారా వింటున్నది.
ఇట్ కెన్ హియర్ ఓన్లీ త్రూ ఇయర్స్.
తాను స్వతసిద్ధంగా వినేటువంటి శక్తి లేదు.
బై ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ ఇట్ కెనాట్ హియర్.
ఇదే విధముగానే అన్ని ఇంద్రియముల ద్వారానూ ఈ మనస్సు కార్యములు సలుపుతున్నది.
ఇన్ దిస్ వే మైండ్ స్టార్ట్స్ ఫంక్షనింగ్ త్రూ ద సెన్సెస్.
కనుకనే ఇంద్రియములు చేసినటువంటి యొక్క దోషములన్నీ కూడాను మనస్సు అనే అద్దం పైన చిత్రింపబడుతున్నవి.
దట్ ఈస్ ది రీజన్ వై ఆల్ ది యాక్షన్స్ పర్ఫార్మ్డ్ బై ది సెన్సెస్ ఆర్ రిఫ్లెక్టెడ్ ఇన్ ద మిరర్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్.
ఈ యొక్క ఇంద్రియములు సంకల్ప వికల్పాత్మకమైనటువంటి తత్వంతో కూడి ఉంటున్నవి.
దీస్ సెన్సెస్ ఆర్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ది థాట్ ప్రాసెసెస్.
కనుక ఇందులో దోషం ఎవరిది? ఇంద్రియముదా లేక మనస్సుదా?
Whose fault is that then? Is it the senses or the fault of the mind?
కనుకని మనస్సునందు స్వతసిద్ధమైన దోషములు లేవు.
Mind does not have mistakes which it commits by itself.
ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క సహవాసం చేతనే మనస్సు మాలిన్యమవుతున్నది.
Only by the association with the senses, mind becomes dirty.
కనుకనే సర్వశాస్త్రములు కూడాను మనస్సుకు మూడు దోషములున్నవని నిరూపించినవి.
All the scriptures therefore have established that there are three types of defects for the mind.
Mala, vichepa, avaranamulani moodu.
Those three are mala, vichepa and avarana.
Mala managa emiti?
What do you mean by mala?
Mana jeevitamulo telisiyo teliyakuno aneka vidhamulanti yokka doshamulu chestunnam.
Knowing or unknowing, we are committing a number of mistakes in our life.
Kevalam ee janmamunande kaadu.
It is not merely in this birth.
Prati janmamunandu kudanu aneka taramulundi kudanu ee yokka doshamulu manam aacharistune vastunnam.
Birth after birth, in many births these mistakes are committed.
Kanuka ee doshamulu yokka malinyamu tara taramulu nundi yuga yugamulu nundi kudanu maarpu chendaka చిత్తం పైన చిత్రింపబడుతూ వచ్చాయి.
ది డిఫెక్ట్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ పర్ఫార్మ్ బై ది మైండ్ ఆర్ ఇంప్రింటెడ్ ఆన్ ద చిత్త బర్త్ ఆఫ్టర్ బర్త్ అక్యుములేటింగ్ ఓవర్ ఎ పీరియడ్ ఆఫ్ టైం.
ఈ అద్దం పైన మాలిన్యం ఉండినప్పుడు మన యొక్క స్వరూపము ఏమాత్రం కూడా సుస్పష్టంగా గోచరము కాదు.
వెన్ ది డర్ట్ అండ్ డస్ట్ అక్యుములేట్స్ ఆన్ ద మిరర్ వీ కెనాట్ గెట్ ది రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ అవర్ ఇమేజ్ క్లియర్లీ ఇన్ ద మిరర్.
ఈ కారణము చేతనే మానవుడు తన స్వస్వరూపాన్ని తాను దర్శించుకోలేకపోతున్నాడు, గుర్తించుకోలేకపోతున్నాడు.
దట్ ఈస్ ది రీజన్ వై మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్ నాట్ బీన్ ఏబుల్ టు గెట్ ఏ వ్యూ ఆఫ్ హిజ్ రియల్ సెల్ఫ్ రిఫ్లెక్టెడ్ ఇన్ ద మిరర్.
ఈ మనస్సనే అద్దమునందు తన యొక్క నిజస్వరూపాన్ని చూడలేకపోతున్నాడు.
హీ హాస్ నాట్ బీన్ ఏబుల్ టు సీ హిజ్ ట్రూ ఫామ్ ఇన్ ద మిరర్ ఆఫ్ మైండ్.
కనుక ఈ అద్దమునకు చేరినటువంటి మాలిన్యాన్ని శుద్ధపరచడానికి తగిన కృషి చేయాలి.
Therefore, we have to make efforts to cleanse this mirror from the dust.
అయితే ఇది ఏ విధంగా చేయాలి?
How can we do it?
దీన్ని చేసేటువంటి ఉపాయం ఏమిటి?
What is the method of doing it?
ఏ మార్గం అనుసరించిన ఇది పరిశుద్ధం కాగలదు?
What path should be followed to purify this mind?
ఇది మానవుని యొక్క ఆహార విహారముల చేత ఇది పరిశుద్ధం గావించుకోవచ్చు.
By proper food and habits, you can cleanse and purify the mind.
Past is past. గడిచిపోయినది గడిచిపోయినది.
Past is past.
కానీ వర్తమానమునందైనా కూడాను మన పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క మార్గమును అనుసరించి దీనిని పరిశుద్ధపరిచేటువంటి యొక్క ప్రయత్నమునకు పూనుకోవాలి.
At least in the present, we should undertake such actions which will help us to cleanse and purify the mind.
That was the first clip of that discourse. The discourse delivered on 25th May 1990. There's something magical about analogies, I think. It's something which is used extensively in the scriptures, all scriptures, irrespective of which language, which religion it is from. And of course, Swami is master of analogies and little stories. The whole of the previous discourse literally...
The abstract truth can be told only mostly through these analogies.
Very true.
Otherwise, it's difficult. It remains abstract.
The earlier discourse, Swami used the analogy of the chariot and explained the mind. And now Swami is bringing in the analogy of a mirror and explaining the mind.
Yes, we say mirror of the mind. That's a common phrase in the West also.
Right.
Similarly, the lake of the mind is another phrase for mind.
Right.
And in the lake also, Swami has talked about this. He says the lake also has these three types of impurities. Mala, Vikshepa, Avarana.
Right, right. I think in other discourses, Swami has mentioned this.
Just like the mirror.
Right.
Only thing is, in mirror, he says there is dust covering the mirror, or your mirror is shaking, the second type.
Right.
Or there is a cloth covering the mirror.
Right. Mm.
Whereas in the lake of the mind, Mansarovar, what we have in the lake of the mind. It's different. The water is dirty. That is why the first mala.
Okay.
Secondly is that agitation. You throw a stone into the pond, it ripples up.
No?
That's the type of agitations that created in that. And the third one is avarna, is a scum layer formed on the surface of the lake, which hides the entire. It makes it opaque. You know, you can't see the bottom at all. And he compares it to the three types of defects in man, you know.
Right.
Beautiful.
In fact, one of the monks, he says, when he's initiated into the order of sannyasis, his master takes him to different regions of Ganga. Oh. In one region where it is just after it's formed, where the currents are very, very swift, there the water is brown because it's washing all the soil across the plain, across the hill slopes. And he says, look at this, and then takes him to the plains, and there the water is absolutely still. And if you drop a coin, you can see it in the bottom. In the bottom. So he explains this, that when your mind is as agitated as that water, it will be as muddy and as dirty as that. But when your mind is still, this is how clear it will be, and you can see your true self.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to the discourse, where Swami is starting again with that beautiful poem, where Swami is saying, you know, because it's a misconception where we feel that you go to an ashram, you go to a temple, you go into the forest.
You'll be carrying your mind with you wherever
right.
you go.
Mm-hmm.
And so the quality of the mind will determine your
right.
activities.
And it reminds me of a famous quote which I read once. Where he said, the one who has not found the temple in his heart will never find his heart in a temple.
That's true.
Pretty much what Swami is telling you, you might be in a temple, but it makes no difference if your mind is not stable and if your mind is not annihilated.
Mm.
That's what Swami says.
That's true.
I'm reminded of a Pandit who visited Ramana Maharshi, you know, and he said, Swamiji, I have read the entire Bhagavad Gita, I have gone through this chapter, I have gone through that, you know, but somehow I don't find any change in me. Then Ramana said, you have gone through the Bhagavad Gita, but has the Bhagavad Gita gone through you?
Wow.
Like you said, the temple and the heart, you know, and it has to come subjectively, see. It is from within that the entire process starts. That is why spirituality is called a subjective science. You know? See, every time you point a finger at the other, four fingers are pointing back at you. So it's all within, it's the whole thing, the whole universe is within, we say.
Pretty similar to the topic of this whole, you know.
Yeah, the Dakshina Murthy is saying that actually.
Right.
He says the universe is but a reflection of a city in a mirror. Every word is important there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reflection. He doesn't say it is the
reality.
Reality. And mirror, in Swami's example, 3 - 1 = 1.
Right.
He says there is an object, there is a mirror, and there is the image in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That is God, Maya or nature, and the individual Jiva. Once you overcome this Maya, that means the mirror is removed, the image also vanishes with it. So the Jiva merges in the God or the Brahman itself. So Brahman alone is, God alone is.
Mm.
Once you, and here also it's similar experience you get when you read Dakshinamurti.
And you know, again, I think we spoke about it last week also, the comparison of the mind with the moon.
Yeah.
That's what they say, you know, when you look at, right now it's in the night, it's dark. The fact is the sun is still glowing. The sun's rays are still being thrown towards the earth. But the only way we can know it is if this moon is there reflecting that same sunlight. Then you say, okay, the sun is still there. It's not gone anywhere. So it's not seen to me. That's what Swami says, that, you know, the mind does not have any its glory of its own, any effulgence of its own. It is only borrowed effulgence. And in fact, even for its activity, it cannot do anything of its own. Swami is saying it cannot see on its own, it cannot hear on its own.
Depends on the senses.
And to think that something like that is being so influential in our lives.
I think in the Gita, Krishna says that amongst the senses, I am the mind.
Right.
In a sense, here Swami says very beautifully that the mind cannot be blamed for anything. It's more like a witness. And it, if you are dominated by the senses, the mind reflects you as being dominated by the senses. If you're dominated by buddhi, it reflects you as being dominated by buddhi. Mm-hmm. And so is the case with the Lord, who is just a witness. And so Krishna says, amongst the senses, I am the mind. So he's like a witness, and he gives you the choice.
I was just going through this concept, just like how you have the four aspects of the mind.
Mm.
There are three aspects of ahankara.
Okay.
Okay, and the first one, it said asmita.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you say asmi, I am, it is the consciousness of your existence.
Mm-hmm.
I am. So it is said, it's almost like a fill in the blanks. I am dash.
Okay.
What you fill that dash with, is going to ascertain what your ahankara is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, I am this body and this mind, then you are having the individual ahankara.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, I am, as Swami says, I am, there is nothing to, you're not attaching yourself with anything, then it is only unity.
As Swami says that, you know, when the atheist says there is no God, he says there is. And then no God. That isness is sat, or existence. So what he's trying to deny is already affirming. So there's no such thing as non-existence. Sat is always existing throughout.
I think one of those discourses Swami gave a very nice poem. I am not this, I am not that, I am not a Brahmin, I am not a Kshatriya,
right.
I am not a God, I am not a man, I am not this, I am not that. I am I.
I am I.
That he brings out very beautifully in one of those.
In fact, he says that, yes. A Nirvana Shatakam of Adi Shankara also says the same thing.
Very
right?
True.
An Advaitik.
In fact, it starts with Mano Buddhi Chitta Ahankara.
Yeah.
That's exactly the topic we're dealing with.
Chintaninaham.
Yes.
Right.
In fact, he says, Christ said, I am the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards he says, I and my Father are one. But Swami says, I am I.
That's it.
In fact,
so that is the supreme state.
It once happened, Swami came and asked a group of people, who am I? And that's when Swami, they were telling Swami, you're the avatar of the age, you're the God incarnate, you're Narayana and all that. And then Swami made the statement, he said, I am I. And in fact, in some of the discourses, Swami goes on to say that when you say Tattvam Asi, which is supposed to be one of the most profound Mahavakyas, Swami is saying, why should we say Tattvam?
Two comes there.
Two comes, that and you.
And even when you say Aham Brahmasmi.
Aham Brahmasmi.
I mean, it's okay knowing these things, but actually believing in them takes a lifetime,
and
I think.
And I think because that is where this discourse which Swami is giving is so very beautiful. Because Swami has spoken of the highest. Swami is told that you're not the body, you're not the mind, you're the Atman. But here, you know, he's breaking it down to what are the different kinds of vagaries of the mind, as the discourse is named. He's classifying it three, and I think he's going to further break it down. And the antakarnas and
antakarna.
Two terminologies we can understand. Where you say jealousy, you say pride, you say selfishness. I think those are things which we can relate to when you talk of little higher things. And I think that's the beauty of this discourse and the discourse we've gone through till now in this series.
I think Swami has just started with mala.
Right. And another profound point which Swami is making, which was really striking, is Swami is saying the purusharthas are not the goal of
mankind.
True. You know, though we have always spoken of them as the goals of life.
That relate to the jiva actually.
Right, dharma, artha, kama, moksha.
Yeah.
Again, you know, Swami saying even moksha is not, it is to give up the...
Purification and final annihilation
of
antakarna.
Annihilation, see, like a diamond, diamond of the Atman comes with the diamond. So, annihilation of antakarna is same what Swami calls, you know. Unless that happens, then the atmic vision, atmadarshan happens with that.
Yes, one of the Vedantic teachers puts it, is all Vedanta and all religious endeavor is to somehow convince the ego to do a suicide. Can you get it to kill itself?
On the contrary, Ramana said it, I think. If you don't realize you are the Brahman, you are committing suicide of the Brahman.
Oh,
the other way around is also true. Life after life, you are going on, not expecting that realization. Then you are committing suicide of the Brahman.
Because it's like how Nisargadatta Maharaj told you that stick to that question: who am I?
Who am I?
And whatever answer comes, deny that.
Deny that.
But
you are not that.
That is because possibly the answer is coming from the mind.
Yes. Yeah, I am this, I am that. And like you said, I am alone is truth.
Okay.
I am this, I am that comes from the mind and ego. That is not the truth.
When Swami says self-confidence, like for example, if you take somebody like Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, tremendous self-confidence comes because he associates himself with the self.
The truth, yeah.
So... In fact, I think in his book, I Am That, there are statements which are absolutely stunning.
Mind-boggling.
Someone questions him about avatars.
Yeah.
About Krishna and Rama. I think he makes a beautiful statement.
He says, avatars come and go. I am.
It's an eternal truth. You know, that is the Shuddha Advaita. In fact, when I talked to him about Baba and all, he said, oh, you are married to Satya Sai Baba. Take care of your samsara.
Okay.
When you marry somebody, then the samsara starts. Take care of your samsara. When there are two, there is always samsara. Where there is one, you are free from everything. So these mind-boggling statements he used to make, and spontaneously, you know, you learn to have to think also.
Yeah, there is no mind, I think, in his case.
Yeah.
But you know, one might get the idea that these are all philosophical quests, and these might be different from what we deal with, like, you know, the day-to-day aggressions and anger and temper and all that. But you look at it, hear what Nisargadatta Maharaj said, that this is a question, hold on to it. It is not easy to hold on to that question. I mean, unless you have transcended materialism, you know, unless this question is so much more important to you than the quest of wealth
so
and comfort, you will not pursue with that question. And I think one of the most beautiful books I've ever read is The Siddhartha by, I think, Hermann Hesse. There he puts this, that, you know, the quest comes and it has all the danger of being put off. This lamp of the flame of this quest has all the ability to be put off. Even that man, the protagonist of that novel, who's supposed to be a very, very astute student of philosophy, he gets lost in the world. But then he says that, all said and done, Swami says, you know, the spiritual quest never goes waste. You always, I mean, you might leave back the wealth you've earned, but the spiritual wealth you've earned always comes with you from birth after birth.
Okay.
So he says eventually that desire is rekindled, and he goes back, and even though he has lost years in samsara, he goes and he attains that final enlightenment.
Amazing.
And I think all this what Swami is telling about vikshepa, mala, and it's all the process of freeing the mind to pursue this quest.
Correct.
You know, you release it from the worldly mundane desires and try to get it over all these things, so that it can have the ability to pursue this spirituality.
I'm actually dying to know what is Vikshepa and Avarna. So I think we better go on to the next clip.
Definitely. In fact, Swami is not done with the explanation of mala also.
Mala,
I think,
itself is quite elaborate.
Right.
So let's go back.
Let's listen to the next clip in that discourse.
Yuvakulainatuvanti vidyarthulu parishuddhamaina దోషరహితమైనటువంటి ఆహారమును భుజించాలి. స్టూడెంట్స్ హూఆర్ యూత్ షుడ్ పార్టేక్ ప్యూర్ అండ్ ఫాల్ట్లెస్ ఫుడ్. ఎటువంటి పరిస్థితులు ఎందైనా కూడాను మనము దోషముతో కూడినటువంటి ఆహారమును స్వీకరించరాదు. అండర్ వాట్ ఎవర్ సర్కమ్స్టాన్సెస్ బి ఇట్ వీ షుడ్ నాట్ పార్టేక్ ఫాల్టీ అండ్ డిఫెక్టివ్ ఫుడ్. బిచ్చం దేహార్థం, వస్త్రం శీతలార్థం. మనకు ఇచ్చినటువంటిది ఆహారము దేహరక్షణకై. ఫుడ్ ఈజ్ గివన్ ఫర్ ది ప్రొటెక్షన్ అండ్ సస్టెనెన్స్ ఆఫ్ బాడీ. కానీ దేహమునకు కొన్ని అనారోగ్యములు కలిగించేటువంటి ఒక ఆహారము ఇది సరి అయిన ఆహారం కాదు. బట్ వీ షుడ్ నాట్ టేక్ సచ్ ఫుడ్ విచ్ కాజెస్ ఎయిల్మెంట్స్ ఫర్ ద బాడీ. దీనినే భగవద్గీత యందు తాత్ర శుద్ధి పాక శుద్ధి పదార్థ శుద్ధి అత్యవసరమన్నారు. ద సేమ్ థింగ్ హెస్ బీన్ డిస్క్రైబ్ ఇన్ భగవద్గీత యాజ్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ది వెసల్, ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ కుకింగ్ అండ్ ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ది కుక్.
ఈనాడు మనము భుజించేటువంటి యొక్క పదార్థములు ఏ విధంగా మనకు లభించినవి?
హౌ హ్యావ్ యూ బీన్ ఏబుల్ టు అక్వైర్ ద థింగ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ యూజ్డ్ ఫర్ కుకింగ్?
ఇది కేవలం అన్యాయార్జితమా లేక న్యాయార్జితమా అనేటువంటి విషయాన్ని మనం విచారించాలి.
హ్యావ్ యూ అక్వైర్డ్ దీస్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ ఇన్ ది ప్రాపర్ వే ఆర్ ఇన్ ది ఇంప్రాపర్ వే?
ఈనాటి మానవుడు అనారోగ్యములకు కాని అశాంతికి కాని గురి కావడానికి మూల కారణము అన్యాయార్జితమైనటువంటి ఆహారమే మూల కారణం.
ద మోస్ట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ రీజన్ ఫార్ ది ఎయిల్మెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ టుడే ఈజ్ ది ఫుడ్ విచ్ హాజ్ అక్వైర్డ్ బై అన్ఫేర్ మీన్స్.
మనము సక్రమమైన ధర్మమైన న్యాయమైనటువంటి యొక్క రీతిలో మనము ఈ ఆహారాన్ని స్వీకరించటం లేదు.
వీఆర్ నాట్ అక్వైరింగ్ దీస్ ఫుడ్ ఆర్టికల్స్ బై ఫేర్ మీన్స్ ప్రాపర్ మీన్స్ ఇన్ ఎ జస్టిఫైడ్ వే.
తాత్కాలికమైనటువంటి లౌకికమైన భౌతికమైన తృప్తి నిమిత్తమై మనము విచారణ చేయక విచక్షణ జ్ఞానమును మనం విచారణ చేయించ మనం అనేక పెడమార్గములను అనుసరించటం చేతనే ఈ అన్యాయార్జితమైనటువంటి ఆహారమును మనం సేకరించుకుంటున్నాం.
వీఆర్ అక్వైరింగ్ దిస్ ఫుడ్ టెంప్టెడ్ బై ది టెంపరీ కంపెలింగ్ సర్కమ్స్టాన్సెస్ ఇన్ ఎ వర్ల్డ్లీ వే ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు గెట్ సమ్ బెనిఫిట్స్.
కనుక మొట్టమొదట ఈ మలశుద్ధ నిమిత్తమై పరిశుద్ధమైనటువంటి ఆహారాన్ని మనం సేకరించాలి.
ఫర్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ మైండ్ వీ షుడ్ పార్టేక్ ప్యూర్ ఫుడ్.
అయితే ఇది ఏది అన్యాయము ఏది న్యాయము అనేటువంటి విచక్షణ జ్ఞానము సామాన్యులకు ఇది చాలా తక్కువ.
ఆర్డినరీ పీపుల్ మే నాట్ హ్యావ్ దట్ పవర్ ఆఫ్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ టు డిసైడ్ వాట్ ఈజ్ ఫేర్ అండ్ వాట్ ఈజ్ అన్ఫేర్.
పాత్ర శుద్ధిగా ఉన్నదో లేదో తెలియదు.
Whether the vessel is pure or impure.
అదంతా శుద్ధి అంతకంటె మనకు తెలియదు.
అండ్ ది ఫుడ్ ఆర్టికల్స్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ఇట్ ఆర్
పాక శుద్ధి వంటవాడి యొక్క భావములు ఏ రీతిగా ఉన్నావో అది మనకు ఏమాత్రమూ తెలియదు.
అండ్ ది ప్రాసెస్ ఆఫ్ కుకింగ్ డిపెండ్స్ అపాన్ ద ఫీలింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద కుక్.
కనుక ఈ అన్నింటి యొక్క పరిశుద్ధత కోసం మనం ప్రయత్నం చేస్తుంటే మన ఉదరం క్షీణించిపోతుంది.
If we want to enquire into to find out the purity in all these three aspects,
anukani aaharam sekarinchina tarvata bhagavat arpitamu aneetundi chesinappude idi parishuddham avutundi.
That is the reason why if you can offer food before you partake, the food gets purified.
Evariki varu bhagavantudu ekkada unnadu ani prashninchukunnappudu tana lo nunchi kudanu oka pedda jawabu ostunnadi.
When each person puts a question to himself as to where God is,
అహం వైశ్వానరో భూత్వ ప్రాణినాం దేహమాశ్రితః ప్రాణాపాన సమాయుక్తః పచాన్నన్యం చతుర్విధం. అహం వైశ్వానరో భూత్వ నేను వైశ్వాన రూపం లోపల నీ యొక్క ఉదరమునందుండి నీవు భుజించిన ఆహారాన్ని జీర్ణింపచేస్తున్నాను అని చక్కని జవాబుంది.
ది రిప్లై దట్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ విథిన్ ఈజ్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ వైశ్వానరా ఐ ఎమ్ ఇన్ యువర్ స్టమక్ అండ్ ఐఎమ్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ డైజెస్టింగ్ ఆల్ ద ఫుడ్ పార్టేకన్ బై యూ.
అయితే ఎప్పుడు అతను జీర్ణింపచేస్తున్నాడు?
వెన్ డస్ హీ గెట్ దట్?
మనం భుజించిన తర్వాతనే ఇతను జీర్ణింపచేస్తున్నాడు.
ఓన్లీ ఆఫ్టర్ వి పార్టేక్ ఫుడ్ హీ విల్ బి గెటింగ్ ఇట్ డైజెస్టెడ్.
కనుక భగవత్ అర్పితం కాకుండా మనం భుజించటం చేత అనేక మాలిన్యము అనేక దోషములు అనేక పాపములు దీనిలో ప్రవేశిస్తున్నాయి.
వితౌట్ ఆఫరింగ్ ఫుడ్ టు గాడ్ వెన్ వీ పార్టేక్ ఇట్ వీ కమిట్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ మిస్టేక్స్ సిన్స్ అండ్ ది రిజల్ట్.
కనుకనే బ్రహ్మార్పణం బ్రహ్మ బ్రహ్మాగ్నో బ్రహ్మనాహృతం బ్రహ్మార్పితం. ఈ బ్రహ్మార్పణ భావంతో మనం భుజించటం చేత అది ఆహారము కాదు, అది ప్రసాదం అవుతుంది.
వన్స్ యు ఆఫర్ ద ఫుడ్ టు బ్రహ్మా ది లార్డ్ ఇట్ బికమ్స్ ప్రసాద, ఇట్ ఈస్ నో లాంగర్ ఫుడ్, ఇట్ ఈస్.
కనుక అందులో ఉండేటువంటి దోషములన్నీ కూడాను పరిహారం అవుతాయి.
ఆల్ ద డిఫెక్ట్స్ ఆర్ రిమూవ్డ్.
తద్వారా మన యొక్క మనసుకు అంటుకున్నటువంటి మాలిన్యము క్రమక్రమేణ కొంత పరిశుద్ధం కాగలదు.
బై దిస్ మెథడ్ ద ఇంప్యూరిటీస్ ఆన్ ద మిరర్ ఆఫ్ అవర్ మైండ్ కెన్ బి స్లోలీ రిమూవ్.
తిరిగి మనసు అనేటువంటి అద్దము పరిశుద్ధంగా మారుతుంది.
దెన్ ఓన్లీ ది మిరర్ కెన్ బికమ్ ప్యూర్.
అయితే ఇది ఒక్క దినముతో, ఒక్క నెలతో, ఒక్క పర్యాయముతో ఇది పరిశుద్ధమయ్యేటువంటిది కాదు.
బట్ ఇట్ ఇస్ నాట్ పాసిబుల్ టు ప్యూరిఫై దట్ ఇన్ ఎ డే, ఇన్ ఎ వీక్, ఇన్ ఎ మంత్.
యోహి జ్ఞానమభ్యాస జ్ఞానాధ్యానం విశిష్యతే జానాత్ కర్మ ఫల త్యాగ త్యాగశాంతి అనంతరం.
అభ్యాసం చెయ్యాలి. ప్రతి మానవుడు, పుట్టిన ప్రతి మానవుడు కూడాను వాకింగ్, టాకింగ్, రీడింగ్, రైటింగ్, ఈటింగ్ అన్ని కూడాను అభ్యాసం చేతనే మనము దీన్ని పొందగలుగుతున్నాం.
ఎవ్రీ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ డెవలప్స్ మెనీ థింగ్స్ త్రూ ప్రాక్టీస్. వెదర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఈటింగ్, రీడింగ్, రైటింగ్, ఆల్ దీస్ కమ్ ఆన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ ప్రాక్టీస్.
దీనికి కూడా ఒక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క అభ్యాసం అత్యవసరం.
దేర్ ఫోర్ ప్రాక్టీస్ ఎసెన్షియల్ ఈవెన్ ఫర్ దిస్ పర్పస్.
అనగనగ రాగం అతిశయ ఇల్లు చుండు, తినగ తినగ వేప తీయనుండు, సానరాపిడి చేత సగమయ్యిపోవును, ఆ పైన వరి ఇచ్చు అంత్యముగను. ఒక వజ్రమునకైనా కూడాను వెల కావాలనుకుంటే అనేక రకములైనటువంటి కోతలు కొయ్యాలి.
ఇఫ్ ఎ డైమండ్ షుడ్ గెట్ ఎన్ ఎక్స్ట్రా వాల్యూ, దెర్ ఇస్ నీడ్ ఫార్ పుటింగ్ ఇట్ టు మెనీ కట్స్.
బంగారు కూడాను పరిశుద్ధమైన అపరంజిగా ఉండాలనుకుంటే అనేక పర్యాలను దీన్ని కాంచి పరిశుద్ధం గావించాలి.
ఇఫ్ యూ వాంట్ టు ఇంక్రీజ్ ది వాల్యూ ఆఫ్ గోల్డ్, యూ హావ్ టు ప్యూరిఫై ఇట్ బై పుటింగ్ ఇట్ ఇన్ ది క్రూసిబుల్.
అదే విధంగానే మన యొక్క మానవత్వం అనేటువంటి యొక్క మానసిక తత్వాన్ని దీన్ని కూడా నువ్వు సంస్కరింప చేసుకోవాలి.
ఇన్ ద సేమ్ వే దెర్ ఇస్ నీడ్ ఫార్ ప్యూరిఫైయింగ్ అవర్ ఓన్ మైండ్.
ఈ విధంగా చేయటం చేత మనస్సుకు అంటినటువంటి మాలిన్యము కొంతవరకు తీరగలదు.
బై దిస్ ప్రాపర్ మెథడ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ పాసిబుల్ టు రిమూవ్ ది డర్ట్ విచ్ హెస్ అక్యుములేటెడ్.
Guess I Prakash, you'll have to wait for another week before we come to Vikshepa and Avarna.
That's true. But this subtle connection between food and the purity of mind,
right,
is so amazing, because, you know, just think of it in absolute physical terms. The food that you eat is a physical entity, and whatever you eat is, and it gets converted into the subtle energies, and the mind is not even having a physical existence. But he says that the food that you eat determines the purity of your mind.
Yes, he says the gross food, part of the gross food goes into making your muscles and building your body.
Mm-hmm.
But the subtle part of the food goes to make up the mind, he says, in mm-hmm. one place. So mind is a product of the food also.
I think that's the reason why many of the people who are very staunch followers of certain sects who worship different deities, they are very particular about food, and they cook their own food, and that becomes a part of their daily routine.
You know, Swami tells one beautiful story, I think you might be knowing. One guru and his disciple, Brahmachari, they are invited for a meal by a householder.
Mm-hmm.
And that householder is very well to do, and he arranges a beautiful meal for them. And when they go there, they served in silver thalis, tumblers and all. They finish eating, and then while leaving, the brahmachari has an urge to steal that tumbler, the silver tumbler.
Correct.
You must have heard that.
Yeah.
And he does that because, and then later on, the guru is surprised that his disciple has stolen this. He tries to find out how this thought came to the disciple. And he makes inquiries. He goes to the house of that householder and finds out that his wife was, she was having the monthly period. So she could not cook. Mm. And so he hired one cook from outside. And that cook was ex-thief.
Okay.
And when he cooked that food, all the thoughts of that cook, you know, went into the food. Mm. And that food, which the brahmachari ate, it affected the subtle aspects, you know. affected his mind, and the thoughts of stealing arose because of the kind of cooking that went into it, you know. So Patra Shuddhi, Padarth Shuddhi, Pak Shuddhi is very important. Well, many are lucky that they have their mothers cooking at home and all. But when you go to hotels and all, you don't know who's cooking what. So Brahmarpanam and what Swami says is very, very relevant.
Right. And you know, the wonderful way with which Swami is connecting, because even just before we started this clip, we said, you know, these are abstract topics, and then you have these normal day-to-day interaction with fellow people around you, and how do you relate that to this high philosophy? And here beautifully Swami is saying that food which is earned through unfair means and unjust means is itself impure. You know, that is something which we face in the world today, where people are the idea of grabbing what is not your share and through unjust means, all that affects the mind. And how Swami is saying that it's an important thing which you have to stay away from. It's, and linking Sanghaniti, Swami would often say, you know, morality in society with something as subtle as the vagaries of the mind. It's a beautiful point which Swami is making here.
It's amazing, because the first impurity of the mind that he says mala, and it looks like the only solution that he gives for tackling this problem is have pure food. Means having the right kind of food is so important and so vital. And then he very nicely explains why we get the diseases that we get. That's because of having improper food. That's because of having food without purification.
Yes.
Pakashuti Padarth.
At another place he says, food is not only that which is taken by the mouth,
right,
also by the senses.
That is true.
So just like pure food, we have to have pure sight and pure hearing and pure all those other five things.
Is that what Swami is meaning here? Here he is talking about physical food that we eat. But in the first discourse...
Right, in the first discourse, Swami spoke about food being everything that goes into the senses.
Yeah.
Right. Here, of course, food, because the subtle aspects of the food are also involved.
I think what is Brahmarpanam for the food, maybe could be said as the Karacharana Kritamva is that for the senses.
Yeah.
In the night you offer everything that is done by the senses and the hands and feet to the Lord. You know, one wonderful thing which strikes me here is you go through all this with the idea of why you're doing this.
Correct.
You know, if the mind, if the idea is very clear in the mind that you're doing this to reach the ultimate consummation of human life, and then you're doing this. But what has happened is, you know, when something is done over a period of time, Swami talks about the value of abhyasa practice. But it also has the danger of becoming dead ritual when it is repeated often and it's passed on to generations without being properly explained. It has the danger of becoming, not always, it does have the tendency of becoming ritual. And, you know, I'm reminded of one very beautiful episode which one old devotee, Chidambaram Krishnan, he narrated when Swami traveled to Kodaikanal with him.
Okay.
A very small group, and like the later years, one of the first few times Swami went to Kodaikanal. So Swami traveled with Mr. Chidambaram Krishnan and Mr. Kamavadani.
Okay.
And two other people. It was an entourage of about four or five people. And they were staying in one of the guest houses which Chidambaram Krishnan owned over there. And Kamavadani, being a very, very strict you know, Vedic scholar, he wouldn't eat food which is not cooked by a Brahmin woman. That was a strict paddhati, or, you know, the ritual which he was following. So the moment he landed in that guest house, he knew that he was supposed to stay there for a few weeks. He told Swami, he told the host, Chidambaram Krishnan, he said, I cannot eat this food. So what you do, you get me some milk and get me some fruits. Don't serve me the food which you are giving everybody else. So though it was a little bit of a problem to arrange for that, he said, definitely, sir, I understand that you're very strict about this. So Chidambaram Krishnan had arranged that fruits and milk would be brought for Kamavadani. It happened for two or three days, you know, this way. And one day, when they were all sitting for food, Swami said, why is Kamavadani not joining us? Okay, and Swami said, call him. So he came and he said, Kamavadani, why are you not sitting with us for food? So he said, Swami, I cannot eat this food. It's not been cooked by Brahmins. Swami said, no, you sit, you have with us. He said, no, Swami, I cannot have. this food is impure, you know. Maybe he would have thought of all this mala and all these things in his mind when he was saying that. And Swami asked a very straightforward and stinging question, I could say. You know. Swami said, what food is pure enough for me? Isn't it pure enough for you?
Wow.
Okay. Sometimes we get carried away by dead habits.
And in between, Chidambaram Krishna was trying to tell Swami that, Swami, no, you don't force this too much. It's not a problem. I'll arrange for that. You know, it's something which he's following. Why do we have to change it? And Swami said, you don't come in between. Okay. And Swami looked at Kamaladhani and said, if you don't want to sit with me and eat, you can leave. You don't have to be here. And, you know, after that, Chidambaram Krishna ran to Kamaladhani and he said, sir, I'll try to pacify Swami. You don't worry about it. And, you know, that is what comes out of being a sincere person who practices, even though it becomes a ritual. Immediately Kamaladhani said, no, get a plate for me. He said, this is more important for me than all the rituals. He was a man who was 80, 90 years of age, and he had practiced this for a good few decades. But he said, no, I mean, Swami,
what Swami
dealing
says
with Swami is more important for me. And immediately said, no, put a plate for me. And he sat and he began eating with Swami. And interestingly, you know, many years later, the same Kamaladhani, the episode narrated by Geeta Mohan Ram, she says that Swami is in the middle of a conference and he comes, breaks away from the conference and brings Kamaladhani to their house because he doesn't eat food which is made by others. And in the conference, he will not get this kind of food. He brings her to, you know, Geeta Mohan Ram's house.
And they cook for him.
Little girls cook for him. You know, the same Swami who was actually telling him that you are following this blind ritual was protecting that ritual later. Because the moment you understand why you're doing it and you're clear about the priorities, then Swami himself is bent upon protecting that thing which you've taken.
I think all the rituals, like, you know, it's more of cleanliness and it's more of this Partha Shuddhi, Padartha Shuddhi, where in traditional houses, what should be done immediately after bath, you should cook, and you should not cook without having bath. I think it's a combination of even physical cleanliness as well as good, healthy mind when you are cooking, so that the food itself is nutritious and that way devoid of all this mala that causes distortion to the mind.
And of course, the very strong point with which Swami ends this clip which we played today is Swami speaks about abhyasa, the importance of practice. You know, he says that I don't deny that this is all difficult, but with practice anything can be achieved. And Swami gives the example of, I think, the diamond, right? The more cuts the diamond is given, the more it shines.
Correct. But of course, the sloka which Swami quoted is Shreyo Jnanam Abhyasa.
Like, what is the
Jnanam Vishishyate Dhyanat Karma Phala Tyagaha Tyaga Shati Anantaram? So, in the sloka, it says Karma Phala Tyagam is the highest. Giving up the ownership of
Dhyana.
Higher than Dhyana or Dhyana, both. Shreyo Jnanam Abhyasa Jnanat Dhyanam Vishishyate Dhyanat Karma Phala Tyaga Tyaga Shanti Ranantaram.
So, from Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Right. In fact, I was just sharing with you yesterday. In one place, Swami asks, you know, why did Vivekananda go to Mother Goddess and ask for Bhakti, Jnana and Vairagya? You know, Bhakti and Jnana can be understood. You know, I don't know whether I'm going to be a devotee or I'm going to be a Jnani. So, better ask for both. But, you know, he asked for Vairagya. And Swami says that Vairagya is actually the fruit which comes even after Jnana. When you have attained Jnana, you are given the gift of Vairagya. That's why he asked for Bhakti, Jnana and Vairagya.
Amazing.
And maybe the positive and encouraging thing with which we could end today's episode is, Swami says, past is past. If you have not done any of this.
That's true. Yeah, he starts
today,
with that.
Right. And he says, you can always start.
Yes.
And you always have hope.
Correct.
And maybe in that hopeful context, we could draw this episode to a close. So, dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Shravana Mananam Nityadhyasanam. We are dealing with the seventh discourse. Next week, we'll continue with this discourse. If you have any comments about this program, you have any suggestions, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thanking Swami for this beautiful opportunity. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Sai Prakash and Suresh Rao sir from Team Radio Sai. We offer our most humble pranams. Shortly, you'll be joined by Bishu with his last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Till then, till we meet next week, this is Prem signing off. Jai Sai Ram.